Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 4:45 p.m. and that is New York time, but I'm based in Cancun for the moment. And when we look at what's been going on in the markets in here today, well, certainly Apple has been making headlines. There has also been the fact that we had a bit of what might be considered a flash rally in the yen this morning. And that's, I think, part of the reason for that is because we're right in the middle of the holiday season and in that twilight zone between the end of trading in one region and the beginning of another, and then also the fact that it is in, you still have Japan that's on holiday. That's part of the reason why we had the opportunity for algo traders to really have a big influence on the market in here today. Then, of course, you have the decline we've seen in copper prices. So those are the three main things I think are worth talking about in here today. Well, Apple has peaked, and now this is the biggest pullback we've seen in the context of the entire uptrend since 2008. My daughter never tires of telling me that she never remembers a time, or that she was born in the same year as the iPhone. So that's obviously a topic of humor in our house, but this is we're probably at a point now where we're at peak iPhone. Apple has made the decision that they're going to wait for others to blaze the trail for 5G handsets. That's obviously going to be by Samsung. Then Apple will come out with their own handset for 5G sometime in 2020. But in between now and then, where is the next source of growth going to come from? Tim Cook has been uniquely without imagination on that front. Apple has been pouring resources into buying back shares, but they have very little to show on the R&D front. They've lured people away from Google to work on artificial intelligence, but Siri is one of the worst artificial intelligence assistants out there. And that's all reflecting in the share price. Everyone who's got wants an iPhone probably has one, and the new ones are rather expensive. And on top of that, the Chinese economy is slowing down. And if it weren't slowing down, you have the trade war, and then there is Chinese nationalism. Why would anyone want to buy a U.S. phone when the CFO and daughter of the founder of Huawei is incarcerated, or, well, I guess she's been let out on bail in Canada? These are all factors that are retarding the growth of demand for its key product. Well, they cut their earnings forecast in here, or revenue forecast, I should say, in here today. And the share is now at a new low. But perhaps the more important point is that this is a very consistent decline. And the size of the rallies that we've seen within this trend, whether that was at the end of October, the beginning of November, the end of November, or now the end of December, they're all relatively similar size. So this decline is not over. And until we see a rally of greater than approximately $20, then we won't have any evidence that the decline in Apple shares is in fact over. And this is a significant issue, considering that it was the first company to get to a $1 trillion market cap. And now it is a shade of that, considering the depth with which it has pulled back. The market cap is now at $674 billion. So that's a very significant deterioration and a real change of fortunes for what was the darling of the stock market for the last number of years. Well, the PE at the moment is still only on an estimated basis as 11.5. Well, that's contingent, of course, on earnings continuing to be delivered, and that's by no means a surety in here. But the lower it goes, the more value is going to be created. It's not as if Apple is about to stop selling phones entirely. So there is obviously a value argument going to start to present itself eventually. But there is no great evidence of it just yet. And of course, because Apple is such a large company and because it's outsourced the vast majority of its manufacturing, both for components and assembly, to other companies, when it runs into difficulty, it has a very wide spectrum effect on markets right across the world. So Apple is an ecosystem all of its own. People tend to think of the ecosystem that Apple has as being the App Store, and that's certainly something that tends to act as a magnet for people to continue to hold on to, or to remain loyal to the Apple infrastructure. But then, of course, there is the supplier infrastructure as well. Well, you can't really talk about Apple without talking about China. And we continue to see that the Chinese market remains weak in here. And the A-share index was just about steady in here today, but it's right in the region of the lows we've seen back in October. China has done a pretty good job of talking up the markets, whether that has been to say that all companies are going to be created or treated equally, which they've certainly said, but nobody really believes, or whether it is that they are going to make nice with trade negotiations. Again, there is it's all well and good to talk about it. It's quite another to actually follow through. But more importantly, they have been talking about tax cuts and fiscal stimulus, but we haven't really seen it yet. And until we see it, then the fact of the matter is that the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet. The ECB has stopped its quantitative easing program. The Bank of Japan is still engaged in quantitative easing, but not nearly to the same extent or magnitude as it had been previously. And China is easing with one hand and tightening with the other, which is acting as a headwind to the economy. When we see shares like Apple deteriorating like it has done over the course of the last 6 weeks, and we see that copper has broken down out of this triangular pattern and has effectively encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and has now got a completed type 2 top formation, well, that's got to point towards a certain amount of angst about the outlook for the Chinese economy. The big factor for any company or commodity that is reliant on China is that the vast majority of demand growth forecasts for just about everything have been contingent on China's growth continuing to advance. But that's not at all guaranteed. The London Metals Index has broken down to new reaction lows, and it has very clear type 2 top formation completion. Well, it's effectively type 2 top with right-hand extension completion characteristics. So that's certainly weighing on sentiment in here. And despite the headlines early yesterday saying that oil had had this storming rally, well, it was in positive territory in here today, but not in a particularly dynamic manner. And there is absolutely no doubt that we have a short-term oversold condition in here. But so far, this rally has only been relatively similar sized compared to the one that we saw, or at least the range that we saw in November. And we're going to have to see more follow-through on the upside and at least push up into that overhead trading range and give us a bigger rally. Then we'll have to see a higher reaction low to really begin to suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And of course, there is the all of the headlines have been focused on the supply side of the equation, whether it's going to be that Saudi Arabia is going to cut more, or what is OPEC going to do, or whether it is in fact that Russia continues to pump and hasn't really joined the party in terms of withdrawing supply from the market, and what's going to happen in terms of the West Texas oil fields when prices are this low. There aren't many people starting to talk about the demand side of the equation, that we've had a very pronounced decline in oil prices. It's not all because the major consumers of oil from Iran have been given a free pass. It's also potentially because we're seeing global growth slowing down, and that represents a headwind to oil demand growth, and not least because of what's going on in China. Well, then we also have what's going on in Europe, and the DAX index was in negative territory in here today. But perhaps the most important thing is that despite the fact that we've had some positive days over the course of the last few months, there's a very clear downward bias to trading. I think it is very likely that Germany is going to move into recession, and if Germany moves into recession, it's not going to be the only European economy that does so. Well, that is going to raise some very significant questions for the ECB, and that I do believe that the most likely course of action, the thing that is likely to take us up and out of this corrective phase, is going to be the adoption of fiscal stimulus in the Eurozone, because they've tried quantitative easing and it didn't work. Quantitative easing is wonderful at inflating asset prices, but it's not so great at the trickle-down effect, and it doesn't particularly stoke economic activity. So we know that fiscal stimulus can achieve those goals. Of course, it's at the price of having to pay back the debt later and having to balance the books later. And it's very much a crapshoot whether the kind of growth you get from a fiscal stimulus is in fact enough to create a self-sustaining expansion so that it can persist after the fiscal impetus has run its course. And that question is now being asked in the USA. Well, the S&P 500 was also in negative territory in here today. And again, this is also worth considering in terms of the consistency of the downtrend. We had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend in and the failed upside break from the peak in September. Then we had a range, and that range was between 2600 and 2800, so a 200-point range. Now we've had a rally in here of approximately 150 points, and it is now easing back from those levels. Well, the minimum requirement to suggest that we are back in a demand-dominated environment is a higher reaction low, and that's something that we haven't yet seen. We may yet see it this week or next week, or alternatively, the market could just break lower. Well, if it does in fact break lower, then we're really we've already got top formation completion characteristics on the S&P 500. I think that's quite clear in here right now. The bigger question for investors is whether we're going to see a reversion back up towards the mean sooner rather than later, and that question will be answered depending on whether we see the market starting to rally into tomorrow or early next week. Are we going to get a higher reaction low? The two primary things that people are worried about is the trade war and the Fed's policy. Well, the Federal Reserve has committed itself to raising interest rates twice this year. It's extraordinarily unlikely whether they're going to be able to do that. I think it's very likely that they're not going to be able to raise rates at all. But the yield curve spread was in positive territory in here today. Perhaps in this occasion, it's probably better to look at government bond prices. And the 10-year Treasury price was up a full point in here today. So that is rapidly unwinding a short position that was evident in this futures price. And now it has put some very clear air between itself and the trend mean, so it has plenty of room in which to consolidate. This is very clearly a break of what has been almost a 3-year decline, and suggests that there is ample demand for safe havens going on in here. Well, if we then look at the 2-year, then it's also rallying, and right now it is rallying just somewhat faster than the 10-year. This has also been an incredibly pronounced downtrend, and this is a very clear break of it. So this is certainly the bond market pricing in the potential that we are back in a rate-cutting cycle, and that it is only a matter of time before the Fed pauses and begins to cut again. So that is also a direct response to the selling pressure that we're getting in the stock market. The fact that some of the largest companies in the world are pulling back in a very dynamic manner. It's also worth keeping an eye on Amazon, because along with Apple, it's been one of the most owned shares by retail investors. And the share has at least paused. It is showing certainly a loss of downward momentum, but it has to do more than that. It needs to put in a higher reaction low and break the sequence of lower rally highs to confirm that it's back in a demand-dominated environment. But it is hovering here around this $1,500 area, which has been a psychological area of, or at least it's been an area where people have been willing to buy over the course of the last 2 months. Well, as we see that there's demand for safe haven assets, that was what stoked some short covering, or for at least stops being triggered in the yen in here today. Well, there is no way that the Bank of Japan wants the yen appreciating by 5 full points over the course of approximately 20 minutes. So we've had a very significant rebound for the dollar against the yen in here, and the Bank of Japan is going to be active in trying to arrest the speed with which the yen is appreciating. But the yen is a safe haven asset, and most particularly for Asian investors who may be starting to be worried about what's going on in China. So what this at least suggests is that there are nervous investors out there, that people had put stops on their short positions and they were triggered, which means that people are now sitting in cash. We are still in an environment where safe haven assets are being acquired by people, that the allure of cash has certainly improved. This is, I think, a rather important point here, that these kinds of moves, they can be attributed to algorithmic trading, and they can be attributed to the fact that we have had an illiquid situation because Japan takes a four-day holiday around New Year. But in addition to that, we also have the fact that this kind of action is deleterious to sentiment, and particularly when we have such aggressive sell-offs going on in other markets. So I think that is something that is weighing not just on on stock markets, but on the commodity markets, but it's also when we think about the global macro picture, that when the yen can move 5 points in a day, well, the last time it's done anything close to that was in 2016. And in subsequent days, we saw a great deal of volatility, but we definitely had very clear evidence of the Bank of Japan coming in to intervene. Well, that's what we're going to need to see again. I think it is perhaps quite likely at this stage that the Bank of Japan will intervene to stop the rally that we're seeing in the yen going on any further. Well, that's rather important when we think about the outlook for the stock market. Topic second section index has got type 2 top formation characteristics. It's unwinding its short-term oversold condition right now, and it was in positive territory when the market was last open on the 28th of December. So it's going to open again on Monday, and then we'll see what happens with the stock market. And we're probably going to be treated to a great deal of volatility. Well, then when we think about what's going on in terms of those other safe haven assets? Well, gold prices have also been resurgent in here, and they were relatively unchanged in here today in US dollar terms. And in fact, I'm sorry, that's not actually true. It's only unchanged since the 24-hour price ticked over 3 minutes ago. It was up in a rather dynamic manner on the trading throughout the day, and that I really should have looked at the chart before I started recording the audio. when we look at it on a weekly basis, the most important thing it's done has been to rally enough to break the medium-term downtrend in 2016. And I think that this entire three-year range is a process of right-hand consolidation following that type 2 bottom. I think it's very likely that we're going to see it come back up towards the upper side of this range. And then the big question is whether it's going to be able to sustain a move up and out of it. But particularly in view of the fact that gold prices have pretty much gone nowhere for the better part of 5 years, this is a relatively cheap asset. And that's particularly in view of what are rather rich valuations on substantial numbers of the equity or at least of the technology sector that has been particularly fashionable over the course of the last few years. Netflix has certainly been one of those companies, and it was able to squeak out an advance in here today, but it's still trending downwards. And then you have Tesla, which is cutting prices. Well, of course, it's cutting prices because it's no longer benefiting from the tax credits for its cars, which is in response to the fact that they're producing more of them. But the share was down almost $10 in here today, and it's pulling back from the upper side of this year-and-a-half long range. Well, we're going to have to see another upward dynamic similar to what we saw last week in order to confirm support around this $300 area. So we're certainly in still in a corrective phase in here, and we have increasing evidence of completed top formations, and we're seeing continued demand for safe haven assets. Then we're also seeing a demand for defensive sectors. So we're seeing, for example, that Celgene today was acquired by Bristol Myers Squibb. They're taking a bigger bet on cancer care. And that has, I think, continued to help fuel the demand, or at least the outlook for the biotechnology sector. Well, they're certainly paying a rich price for Celgene, but the Nasdaq biotech sector has got potential for additional M&A activity here because there are so many promising treatments out there for cancer care that it's quite likely that we're going to see additional M&A activity, and not least as these companies try to compete to lock in lower borrowing costs now rather than later. There is an awful lot of debt that needs to be refinanced in 2019, 20, and 21, and that could cause some indigestion, which could result in yields moving higher. Well, high yields have spreads have been rallying in a rather ambitious manner over the course of the last 6 weeks. They're at the close yesterday, they were 533 basis points. And it's not really until we start to see these high yield spreads starting to come back down again that we'll have clear evidence that this corrective phase has in fact run its course. And then, of course, we have the fact that the banking sector continues to remain under pressure. So then we also have the knock-on effect that is happening for the kinds of countries, businesses, currencies that have depended on Chinese growth. And in the absence of clear remedial action, then there is the potential that China will also move into a recession. Well, that's particularly having an effect on countries like Australia and Canada, because they've been some of the primary destinations for money flowing out of China and into their respective property markets, but they've also benefited enormously from Chinese demand for their exports. Well, the ASX 200 was in positive territory in here today, but it's still got a succession of lower rally highs, and it's still trending downwards. And that the fact that it hasn't done worse has been, I think, it's the domestic index has been sheltered by the weakness that we've seen in the Aussie dollar. Well, the Australian dollar is closing out the day back above the 70 cent level, and it was also a victim of some of the trading that we saw around the yen earlier on in the session today. But despite the fact that we've definitely had some shorts unwound in here today, it's going to have to push back above the trend mean in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. And the housing market in Sydney and Melbourne has given up about 10 to 11% over the course of the last 12 months. This is the biggest decline we've seen since Australia has had a recession, which the last time was in the 1980s. The Canadian dollar also remains under pressure. And it was in mildly positive territory over the course of the last few days, and there is the potential that it could unwind its oversold condition if we do see an additional rally in oil prices. But it's a shade of the value that it was at back in 2010 and 11 and 12. And there is the potential for it to go lower in here if commodity prices continue to deteriorate and China in particular experiences continued pressure. So there's certainly risk in some of the bigger commodity producers. Well, where you're definitely seeing some enthusiasm for markets right now is in Brazil. And the Bovespa index was at a new all-time high in here today in nominal terms. The Brazilian real has put in a higher reaction low. If we're looking for an example of what a higher reaction low looks like, well, we get it with the Brazilian real, that we had the rally to unwind the oversold condition, then it pulled back and found support at a higher level, and now it's back testing the region of the trend mean once more. Well, when we look at the iShares Brazil ETF, then what we're presented with here is an ETF that is now bouncing from the region of the trend mean and doing so in a rather dynamic manner. So there is evidence that the Bolsonaro administration is going to follow through on their campaign pledges. He's appointed Guedes the finance minister, who's University of Chicago trained economist. So he has a rather good hand dealt to him here. But the country is running fiscal deficits. That's certainly going to have to be turned around. If they can get a handle on corruption, and that's a very tall order, and if they can cut through regulation, again, that's a very tall order too, then that would certainly be positive for the economy. And when we think about what's going on out there in the world, I think it's increasingly important to assess emerging markets on their individual merits, because China has been growing in importance in among the emerging market ETFs over the course of the last few years, so that Tencent is the biggest constituent of the emerging markets index. This the MSCI emerging markets ETF looks virtually identical to the Hang Seng, but that completely belies the very different outlook that we're seeing in a number of emerging markets. So the Nifty index in India was in negative territory in here today, but it has exhibited such clear relative strength that there is the potential that we're going to get some ranging and consolidation. But India is probably one of those countries that's likely to bounce first in the event that we do move into a more pronounced decline. And Indonesia has also sidestepped a lot of the selling pressure that's been going on. It's one of the primary candidates, in addition to India and Vietnam, for additional outsourcing of manufacturing, considering that it has got a large young population. Then, of course, you also have Brazil. So it is within China and Europe where we have the very clear evidence of they represent the epicenters of risk. Well, the other primary safe haven asset are German Bunds. and the yield on the Bund is now down to 15 basis points. So it has quite clearly broken down from this range that's persisted for the last 2 years, and it's really going to require a very clear upward dynamic in order to question that we don't still have demand dominance here. There is the potential that in the event that growth continues to deteriorate in Europe, that German yields are going to go negative once more. And again, that's an incredible set of circumstances that we have such an incredibly large amount of money that is trading at yields where a buy and hold investor couldn't possibly hope to make money. So there's an irrationality to it, but nonetheless, this is a momentum trade. So we continue to see this evidence of demand dominance for safe haven assets. And these are, I think, important characteristics. Eventually, we are going to see things starting to turn around. I saw a graphic in here today, and let me see if I can find it, where it was sentiment offset by it was investor sentiment and the S&P 500 with a 1 year forward rate. So when sentiment tends to be at its peak, then markets tend to bottom a year later. When sentiment tends to be at its nadir, then markets tend to peak a year later. Well, we've had a very, very significant deterioration, and sentiment is really quite bearish. Well, that needn't necessarily mean that it's going to improve immediately, but all reactions eventually do end. And when we do see the end, we'll have clear evidence of it on the charts. But the issue right now is that we don't see it quite yet. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.